Morning, Apes. Inflation is back on the rise, and meanwhile, we have artificial intelligence stocks absolutely going back up to the moon after taking a break for about one day. Meanwhile, we got Southwest Airlines stock absolutely crashing out of the sky and plummeting into the side of a mountain. Now, I'm sure it's better than one of their planes doing so, but I'm sure a lot of shareholders would disagree with me on that. And of course, it is time for short kings and small caps to unite. We're talking about the outperformance of small cap stocks that we've been seeing lately, what this means for broader U.S. markets. Welcome to the Daily Peel's video stream for the day, guys. My name is David from WSO. Hope everybody is doing well. Thank you all for joining us here today. Let's go ahead and get into the market snapshot here before we talk about any of the big news just yet. So, WSO Alpha portfolio, we've been doing pretty good lately, but yesterday we did underperform the S&P by a decent amount. That put us back under the index for the year. I mean, beating the S&P 500, it really is too easy. So sometimes we got to let them take a little bit of a lead. We're up 8.83% on the year. The S&P is up 9.12%. All good stuff to see. We were up 60 basis points yesterday. The S&P was up 1.12%. A little bit of a laggard, but hey, nothing we can cry about. NASDAQ was up 1.54% yesterday, so drastically outperforming us on the day. We kind of use a quasi-combination of the two for our benchmark here. So the important thing is that we're underperforming both. Large reason for that was because Bitcoin and Ethereum, which we do have exposure to in the WSO Alpha portfolio, were somewhat underperformers on the day, both underperformed the NASDAQ's return. Bitcoin was up 1% in the 24-hour period, whereas Ethereum was up about 1.51%. Still seeing Bitcoin above 70,000 and Ethereum above 4,000, all stuff that we love to see. Great for you crypto bulls out there as well. Let us know what other coins we should be looking at, where it can gamble my money and get the rug pulled out from under me. I kind of miss those days of 2020 and 2021. So let me know if you guys got any good rug pulls you want to recommend. All right, but let's go ahead and move into the big story of the day. And that was, of course, CPI. The Bureau of Labor Statistics on Tuesday dropped the latest CPI report for the month of February. What we did see was yet another uptick in monthly inflation. We go ahead and take a look here. It's kind of like, boomers out there watching this might remember the movie Beetlejuice. So when you go into that movie, or when you watch that movie, effectively what happened in Beetlejuice is if you say the word Beetlejuice three times, you reincarnate the ghost of Beetlejuice and he comes and just completely fucks up your day. And it seems like we might have done that same thing by saying the word rate cuts. We've said it a little bit too many times. Now inflation has started to creep back higher. We're starting to get a little bit nervous that we're going to see a repeat of the 1970s and 80s situation, but we're starting to defeat inflation and then it shot right back up and surpassed its previous peak. That is the exact opposite of what we want. Jay Powell fancies himself as a modern-day Paul Volcker, so I'm sure he's going to do everything in his power to prevent it, but that didn't stop February CPI from creeping up to 0.4%. That's coming off of a month of 0.3% in January, 2 months of 0.2% in November and December, and then 0.1% in October. So this is the highest we've seen since September of last year and confirms a strong uptick that we're seeing. But that really was the only scary part of the report. If we dive a little bit deeper, we can see exactly what's going on here. So the most important thing to look at is going to be core CPI. Now, we all know that Jay Powell and the Federal Reserve, they strongly prefer the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index to the Consumer Price Index. And so the closest that we can get from the CPI to the PCE report is going to be through the core CPI. This, obviously, it extracts energy and food costs from the overall reading. And the most important metric of that is going to be the annual core CPI reading, which we did see continue to downtrend. So we saw core CPI come in at 3.8% for the year, also 0.4% for the month. All of these were above expectations, by the way, as well, but only by about one basis point or about 0.1%. So it really wasn't a huge deal. Nobody was kind of freaking out too much, especially because we did see core prices start to decline. Now, the scariest thing in this report, and one of the main reasons that we started to see that uptick in monthly inflation, was energy prices. Over the past couple of months, energy prices along with food have been doing the Lord's work by bringing CPI and overall inflation lower. That trend reversed in February. We saw gasoline prices start to tick back up. Overall energy prices were up 2.3%, and they, along with housing prices, contributed to about 60% of the total inflationary increase. So really comes down to those energy and shelter prices. Now, we all know that shelter prices are counted absolutely terribly by the Bureau of Labor Statistics and by the government in general. These guys do a worse job counting for shelter costs than SVB did managing its duration risk. So really isn't something major to be looking at here. But what I always like to do to kind of supplement that is go ahead and pull up the Redfin Rental Index. What we did see in February as well was the largest uptick that we've seen in more than a year in asking rents for new tenants. That's definitely a scary sign. Now, it is only 2.2%, which isn't as much as the CPI report is kind of purporting for it to be. The CPI, what they do, it's called owner's equivalent rent, and it is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of in my entire life. They literally call homeowners, like a couple hundred or thousand of them, and say, "Hey, bro, how much are you going to rent your house for?" And they're like, "I have no fucking idea," and throw a number out there. And that is how we determine shelter inflation. That is the most important asset, a most important part of life for most people. It's absolutely ridiculous that that's still how we count it in 2024 when we have sources like Redfin that do a much better job. Now, the ultimate takeaway here is nothing really changed. You know, the famous poet, philosopher, gospel musician, Eminem, aka Marshall Mathers, you guys might know him. He famously stated back in the day, excuse me, "How many times can I say the same thing different ways that rhyme?" That was his famous statement, and that's what it felt like for me writing this report yesterday, because it's just been the same shit since like September, October of last year. Every CPI report is showing, you know, a slight little reason to be a little bit concerned, but nothing too major, and it didn't really shift rate expectations yesterday either. We saw a 1% move lower in the odds of a cut at the March meeting, excuse me. So, and that's going to actually be next week, 1 week from today. We saw the odds of a cut move lower by 1%. So, didn't really move markets. The indexes were up overall. And if you really want to just avoid energy or heat inflation, just simply keep the heat off in your house. That's what my dad always does. He's an economic genius as well. It's up there with Milton Friedman, I would say, by using that strategy. So, avoid energy inflation by just being cold. All right, that's kind of the main takeaway. So, nothing really too concerning with the CPI report, but we will be watching for the Federal Reserve's rate moves next week, and then, of course, PCE towards the end of the month. Let's get into some of the stock movers of the day here. First and foremost, we got MicroStrategy. This thing is basically a spot Bitcoin ETF itself. It's kind of a levered spot Bitcoin ETF, which I don't know if the SEC would approve if that was a thing, but they had a great day yesterday. So, they got some positive commentary from places like TD Cowen, Canaccord, all raising their price targets, some going as high as $1,810. It's a huge uptake from the stock where it is right now at about, I think it's at 15 something right now. It's one of those more expensive stocks, but a lot of people are starting to go bullish on companies that hold Bitcoin or mine Bitcoin because you can kind of get leverage on them. It's kind of like holding an oil explorer or something like that. And if they actually do discover oil, their upside is going to be a lot more than the actual asset itself. And so there's potential for these miners and these companies that hold Bitcoin to see stronger returns than Bitcoin itself due to the premium that they might get assigned if demand for those positions actually kind of exceeds it. Basically, they could outstrip the actual pace of Bitcoin if investors get too excited about a certain position. So it does have more upside potential, of course, has more downside potential, especially because these things can actually go bankrupt, whereas Bitcoin can't. Just kind of thinking out loud at this point, but that's kind of what it looks like, especially for MicroStrategy yesterday. That's what we saw in commentary from AllianceBernstein as well. All right, let's go ahead and take a look at some AI stocks. You know, these things have been ripping for well over the past year or so. We saw a slight pullback on Friday and into Monday of this week, and then it was right back to it. NVIDIA was up over 7% on the day yesterday, because anytime this thing has a red print, you know some of these whales are going to be coming in and scooping up shares as fast as they can. This thing just seems like it absolutely cannot go down. It's completely defying gravity, and it was really linked to strength in Oracle's AI unit yesterday. So, Oracle came out on Monday with their latest earnings report. They saw extremely solid growth in their data center units and in cloud infrastructure. That's always a good sign for artificial intelligence. So the stocks were right back to moving higher. NVIDIA, SoundHound AI, a whole bunch of other ones were all getting in on the gains. All right, now the exact opposite of gains over here, we have Southwest Airlines. Like we said, this stock, if it was a plane, absolutely crashed into the Hudson, and it didn't save any lives like Sully did. This thing just completely fell apart. And it's largely not even Southwest Airlines' fault. The culprit here is once again the usual suspect himself in Boeing. I mean, Boeing at this point has become the guy that you give a bid to in the fraternity for because he has a lake house, but everybody absolutely hates interacting with him. You know, he has great resources, but nobody wants to be around him whatsoever. That's basically what Boeing is to Southwest and the entire rest of the airline industry. Southwest has to come out yesterday and say that they're expecting delivery delays from Boeing because these guys can't keep their doors on their planes, can't keep them in the sky, and really just seem like they're doing whatever they can to, like, low-key kill as many American travelers as they possibly can. So down from 58 737 MAX planes expected this year, Southwest is only going to be getting 46. Obviously, that's going to reduce their capacity. So they had to come out and say that they were going to be restating their financial guidance for 2024. Fucking Boeing killing the vibe once again. Their shares were down 4.3% on the day. Meanwhile, Southwest took the brunt of the impact at 14.9%. Moving on down below to our final stock mover, we have On Holdings. Guys, shareholders were absolutely sprinting away from this running shoe company yesterday after reporting their earnings. Thing is, it wasn't even that bad. They saw 47% sales growth for the quarter compared to the same quarter of last year. Incredibly strong, but what they did do was report a surprise loss for the quarter. That had investors running for the hills. They also issued some relatively weak guidance, but a lot of the losses that they recognized last quarter come simply from currency conversions. So don't be too surprised to see if this is a short-term overreaction, and we'll see an uptick relatively soon. Now, finally, let's go into the thought banana, the last portion of the day, because it's the little things that count. It's the, you know, we all love short kings, and most of all, we love small-cap stocks. Now, the Mag 7 has gotten a lot of attention over the past couple of years, especially over the past year or so, but if we go ahead and take a look at the indexes since about that October 27th of 2023 low, we can see that the equal weight S&P 500 has been keeping up with the S&P 500 since that day. So the S&P 500, they weight stocks by market cap. Whatever your market cap is in proportion to every other holding in the index, that's going to be how much exposure the S&P index has in your specific name. So names like Microsoft, Apple, Nvidia, they have a lot more than those at the bottom. Like, I think SMCI just got added, and like the smaller ones down towards the bottom are like an Airbnb or something else like that. So there's a lot more of a weighting towards those Mag 7 names that have been ripping for the past couple of years, whereas the equal weight index splits the S&P 500 completely equally at 0.2% in each position, and both have been keeping up with each other since that October 27th low. Now, that might come as a surprise given how much everybody's freaking the fuck out about the Mag 7 and large, and large mega cap tech stocks coming in and absolutely dominating the market. Concentration has been a big concern over the past couple of years, but that's not really what we've been seeing lately. So small cap stocks have kept up since that low, and we're starting to see a lot of solid performance from some of the larger small cap names. Keep in mind, names like CrowdStrike are in the Russell 1000, Russell 2000 index as well. So it's not exactly a huge surprise, but starting to see those small caps does suggest that the gains that we've seen in the United States are more robust than otherwise thought. Plus, what this would be suggestive of is that investors are just getting so bullish on the United States and our economic growth metrics that they're willing to spread their bets from the Mega Cap Mag 7 names. Keep in mind, guys, that these big tech names were often seen as like proxies for bonds over the past couple of years because bonds were getting absolutely eviscerated during that rate hiking cycle. So people were starting to pull money into big tech because really they pretty much never go down. Like we said earlier, Nvidia, other AI stocks absolutely defy gravity on a daily basis. So wasn't much of a surprise to see investors pour money into them, but now we're starting to see that broaden just a little bit. So we're starting to invest in more small cap stocks, willing to take on a little bit more risk, all bullish for markets and the economy in the longer term. That about does it for us here today, guys. We want to finish you off, of course, with one of our favorite all-time quotes from Mr. Peter Lynch himself. He said that selling your winners and holding your losers is like cutting the flowers and watering the weeds. If you have large caps, small caps, whatever they are, and they're starting to perform well, hold on to those bastards because they're more important to you than your fucking children. Because these things, if they continue to outperform, they're going to be putting those kids through college one day until you won't have to take out a shit ton of debt and get completely destroyed like most debtors over the past couple of years, especially with these rate hikes. Always be thinking, guys, it's always about rates. Screw the kids. Rates are much more important. Whatever J Powell says, we gotta do. All right, that pretty much does it for us here today. I don't think there's anything else. Guys, stay tuned actually as well, because we're gonna have some shorter videos dropping relatively soon here. We're starting to do a lot of like quick hit analysis on like economic reports, earnings reports, and all that other bullshit. So then if there's anything at all that you want to see our takes on, let us know, and I'll be happy to go ahead and read it and tell you why your take is ridiculous and why I'm right. I've actually never been wrong in my entire life as well. So that's a fun fact about me to end off for the day. Leave us a like, leave us a subscribe, whatever the fuck people say on YouTube to try to get that attention. Let us know what you like, what you hate, what you want to see more of, what you want to see less of. Fortunately, if you want to see less of me, you got to join the line. My parents have been saying that since day one, and I'll be sticking around for quite a while. Thanks for joining us here today, guys. Make sure to read The Peel as well here, and we'll see you tomorrow. Happy investing, happy trading. Bye now.
And thanks to you, my listeners at Wall Street Oasis. If you have any suggestions whatsoever, please don't hesitate to send them my way, patrick@wallstreetoasis.com. Until next time. We'll be right back.